Aloha, it's Tuesday, September 2nd. This is D.W. Gibson in for Catherine Cruz. Mahalo for joining us here on The Conversation, Hawaii Talks. As the new football season kicks off, we're talking all things Aloha Stadium, but the stadium's legacy and future encompasses so much more than one sport. The envisioned venue has the potential to host a range of special events and concerts. It's also intended to be the anchor for a 90-acre development that will eventually include more housing and new businesses. So what are your questions, concerns, thoughts about the process? We have the governor's advisor for the project, one of the developers for the stadium, and a longtime sportscaster here to take your calls. The number to reach us at is 808-941-3689.
Support for HPR comes from Hawaiian Airlines, now with more destinations in partnership with Alaska Airlines, serving the islands for 95 years and committed to serving Hawaii for the next generations to come. HawaiianAirlines.com.
The Puerto Rican superstar Bad Bunny pours his love for his home into high-energy dance beats and lyrics. Now a university uses that music to teach students about Puerto Rico.
And it's using one or two songs from the latest album as a kind of structuring device for each class.
Class is in session. That's next time on The World.
Beginning this afternoon at 1.
Support for HPR comes from the Honolulu Board of Water Supply with a mission to provide fresh water to the people of Oahu, committed to conserving and protecting Oahu's water resources since 1929. BoardofWaterSupply.com.
This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm D.W. Gibson, and we are talking all things Aloha Stadium today on Tuesday, September 2nd. Our guests in studio are Brennan Morioka, the advisor to the governor on this project, and Stanford Carr from Aloha Halawa Development Partners in charge of developing the stadium. And we have on phone, too, Scott Robbs, longtime UH sportscaster and host of Spectrum Sports Game On. I thank all of you for joining us here today. Stanford, I'll begin with you, sir. I want to hear from you in terms of, let's just get an update on where the project stands at present. I know there was a meeting last week to talk about demo and when that's going to begin. Give us an update there.
So we secured our demolition permit and grading permit about a week and a half ago. We're finalizing a contract, demolition contract with Hawaiian Dredging as we speak. And we'll be issuing the notice to proceed, which I anticipate issuing by the end of this week. And then you're going to start seeing some activity on the site. They're going to start mobilizing the cranes and start erecting the perimeter fencing and coordinating with the stadium authority to ensure that the swap meet continues to operate very smoothly. With future plans in October to relocate them to the upper parking lot.
And I know so that was an adjustment we had last week from the original timeline of the end of August here. Talk to listeners about sort of what that extra time was needed for in terms of moving that back there.
It was basically the legalese, crossing the T's and dotting the I's, legal documentation, you know, opinions, certificates, vendor compliance certificates. So all legal work, and because the lawyers are from Hawaii to Washington, D.C. to New York, with the time difference, we're sometimes unable to get things done in order.
Right. And Brennan, you know, I think that one thing that is interesting about this project, as opposed to some other big public work projects we've seen in recent years, is that we're pursuing the public-private model here. Talk to our listeners about that model and why that's the way that the state decided to go with this project.
Well, yeah, thanks, DW, for having us on, because we do appreciate the opportunities like this to really kind of get out in front of the public and provide as much information, because I think that's one of the hallmarks that has been a characteristic of this project, is that it's been very transparent. You know, we haven't shied away from any of the issues. And so, again, we appreciate these kinds of opportunities. But yeah, and, you know, there's been a long history in terms of the start and stops of this project. When we got the green light from Governor Green a couple of years ago to basically restart the procurement process, which we had gotten to a point where we were fairly far along, and Stanford was actually a part of the original procurement process that got stopped at the end of Governor Ige's administration. Throughout the conversations with the legislature, you know, there was always limitations on how much money was going to be provided to the project. And so we always knew that the amount of money that the state was going to be being able to provide or use for the construction of the stadium was going to be far less than the kind of stadium that we would want. So the only alternative that we had at that point was to go towards a public-private partnership where we could also engage a private partner. In this case, it's Aloha Halawa Development Partners, and Stanford is the lead for AHDP. But it was also to be able to engage that private partner in bringing in their own capital to subsidize the difference of the stadium that we were that we could afford versus the stadium that we would want. So the state is putting forward, at the end of the day, the state is only putting forward $350 million in general obligation bonds. We know the stadium that we put into the RFP is going to be somewhere upwards of $450 to $475 million. So that difference has to come from somewhere else. And that burden was placed onto the developer. But that doesn't mean that there aren't other kinds of opportunities to bring in other monies. But that's where the private partnership comes in, is because we needed that additional monies. And in this case, we wrapped in the real estate development around so that the developer or the builder of the stadium had access to revenues to pay themselves back over time, a long period of time, to recoup a lot of the initial capital investment. So that's one of the beauties of being able to approach this project with a public-private partnership, and the stress is on that partnership. So we are working very closely with Stanford and his team. And I do want to kind of also comment, because a lot of people talk about that we're already in a delay. That's the furthest thing from the truth, because we've actually hit all the milestones on the critical path that we've laid out from the very, very beginning. So while we tried to execute the contracts in the end of July, we pushed it, or the end of June, we did push it back to the end of August, but that was knowing that those contracts just needed to be in place by the time we were to issue notice to proceed on demolition, which is exactly where we are today. So as far as the critical path is concerned, we have maintained that milestones, and we've hit every one that we've publicly stated that we needed to be hitting in order to achieve a certain deliverable. People might look at this now March 2029 delivery deadline as pushing it back, but that's just a part of the process. You know, three, four years ago when we set out that fall 2028 date, it was very ambitious, and it was for us to kind of set that North Star for something to achieve. But as we go through the process and go over with Stanford and his team what the realities are in delivering a project, especially in light of some of the national and international influences like tariffs and supply chain issues, we realized that the deadline needed to be pushed back to March 2029, which is a reasonable and realistic deadline. Whether they can deliver it faster, I think that's what they're going to be attempting to do, but you know, that's kind of what we're working on.
Got a big smile out of Stanford there. Yeah. Yes. I know it's not a matter of just sort of one contract being signed. There are many agreements in the works in Stanford. I know as of a few weeks ago, a few of those had been finalized, few not. Update listeners in terms of agreements, and have all of them been signed at this point?
Well, like I said earlier, we're finalizing the demolition contract with Hawaiian Dredging right now. We're also tightening up and refining the contracts with Populous, our design architect, Wilson Okamoto Engineering, who's our civil engineer, our architect of record, RMA Architects, the design build contract, which is ACOM Hunt Hawaiian Dredging. So there's still a lot of work to be done, but we're fast-tracking it. Our demolition schedule is approximately a 10-month duration. Hopefully we bring it in. We pride ourselves in doing things ahead of schedule and under budget. So, you know, we will strive to do the same on each of our projects. But there's a whole lot of work ahead of us. We're rolling up the sleeves. Now that the project documents are near completion, with the lawyers, you know, crossing the T's and dotting the I, we can roll up our sleeves and get to work here.
But just to be clear, so I understand and hearing things right, some of those longer term agreements in terms of like the master development agreement and the 30-year stadium ground lease, those are still in the works, Brennan?
Yes. So the two that we are finalizing right now and will be signed and executed is the stadium operating agreement, which is done, and then the initial ground lease, which is also done. The other two that we're working on is the master development agreement, and then also the longer term ground lease, but also what's called a reciprocal easement, where it just talks to how we use common areas. And those two aren't as critical, so we can push it down. We are working through to try and sign those within the next 1 or 2 months.
Okay, great. And I know we haven't gotten to Scott yet. Scott, I'm going to come back to you after the break with a question. I want you to queue up a question for our two folks here, a question on your mind that you've been hearing from listeners. I'm D.W. Gibson. We'll be back right after a short break. Welcome back to The Conversation. I'm D.W. Gibson. Today's show is a call-in about Aloha Stadium. What are your thoughts, questions, comments? Call us at 808-941-3689, 808-941-3689. I'm here with Brennan Morioka, the advisor to the governor on the project, Stanford Carr of the development team putting the project together, and Scott Robbs, longtime sportscaster. Scott, I want to start with you, sir. I have a feeling you've had a few conversations about this stadium project with sports fans out there. Tell us what comes up again and again in terms of questions people have, concerns people have.
Well, first off, I want to say thanks for having me. And I really want to thank Stanford and Brennan, because I think this shows that we all in this community want this to come out right. Maybe everybody has different versions of how we get there, but it's encouraging that a lot of people want to see this project to fruition and to make it something that we can all be proud of. And I think that is kind of what everybody is thinking. I come from the stance of not looking backwards. I mean, there's a lot of blame. We've gotten here for a lot of reasons, and there are a lot of people that can have fingers pointed at them, but that doesn't do any good as far as I'm concerned. I think I want to look forward, and let's find ways to make this project, and I think that's what I hear other people say as well, make this project the best and not have a repeat of 50 years of what went on with the original Aloha Stadium, which was kind of, you know, from the beginning, it was kind of doomed, and it's amazing that it was able to be held together as long as it was.
And so what do you hear when folks, you know, think about this development? Are there specific concerns people have, even just in terms of like features of the stadium?
Absolutely. Yeah. Brennan, I know you mentioned transparency, and I've heard you quite a bit on the radio, and I appreciate you coming and doing all the transparency things. But, you know, I think a lot of people really were taken aback with a couple of weeks ago when it came out and said, number one, it's going to be 22.5 instead of 25. Doesn't sound like a big difference, but, you know, perception is reality. And that the football season would be pushed back another season. The stadium would be ready in, I believe, March of 2029. But the main tenant for that stadium is going to be the UH football team. Let's not fool ourselves. And that means you're going to have to wait another season to the 2029 season. I think that has ticked off a lot of people within the community.
So let me jump in there, Scott. And thanks for participating in this to just flush it all out so that the community knows really what's going on. So we approached this, first of all, we did commission a bunch of studies and structural tests, environmental hazardous material and foundations. only to discover that the north and south cast-in-place concrete structures have a long life ahead of them if it's well-maintained. So that eliminates the need to demo the north and south cast-in-place end zones, which saves us about $90 million.
Right.
So let's start there. The other approach we took is, hey, let's see how we can approach this incrementally. I agree, 25,000 seats could jeopardize UH Division I status. And we just don't want that. UH is very important to all of us and their football program. And so I've had many conversations of, hey, we need to build a stadium bigger than 25,000 seat capacity, and we agree. And I've had a lot of conversations, but this is what the consultants came up with in the RFPs. We had to abide by the RFP, but we started looking at exploring what's the minimum we can build now, phase one, and add on incrementally a second phase. So 22,500 seats, including 10 luxury suites, a club lounge, and the press box is phase one that we can build for just over about $450 million, including soft costs. Now, phase
Brendan,
two.
Can I interrupt you real quickly? I apologize, but I hear these phases things, and I'm going to be honest, it makes me nervous because, I look at the University of Hawaii baseball stadium. It was built in 1984, and that was phase one of a four-phase stadium. It's still in phase one 40 years later. What assurances does the public have, and what assurances do us as taxpayers have that there will be a phase two and it's not just lip service?
Thank you for that. And I just want to clarify for listeners and everything, this is Stanford who jumped in to get on the
No worries,
just
Scott.
So we know all the voices are making sure we know who's talking. So Stanford, yeah, go ahead with that.
It'd be easier if I could visually share with you the plans. How we'll add a second tier to the north and south end zones that add 7,000 seats to each end. And on the east bowl, adding a second tier of seats that will yield anywhere from 8,000 to 10,000 additional seats. So we're looking at a full build out, about 44,000 to 46,000 seats, depending on seating configurations. And we feel that's a much more comfortable size, because we have designed the stadium to accommodate professional rugby and professional soccer, mm-hmm. and we want to have the seating capacity so that we can attract international entertainers and have concerts there. And in order to attract that, we need the sound systems, the audio, video, and the seating capacity to make it economically feasible for them to come and play.
And this is
so When are we looking at maybe the beginning of phase two then? Let's say the stadium is completed on time in 2029. Where does the monies come from, and when does the project begin then?
Maybe I can address this, and this is Brennan for Scott, since he's not in the studio. And those are very good questions, Scott, and legitimate concerns that a lot of people talk to us about. And so the two things. One is the capacity and whether, what the timeline would be for adding additional phases. And then the other is the actual schedule. So first, with regard to capacity and the phasing, number one, we needed to, number one, be able to build something that we can afford. And that's where we looked at the 22,500 seating capacity as an initial phase. And then, but part of the concepts that we did work with Stanford on from the very beginning was that this thing that the stadium needed to be scalable in phases. So meaning that if we did get more money from external sources, that he wasn't going to need to go in and gut things and then, basically take the stadium down and not be usable for certain periods of time. He needed to be able to have a concept that he could just continually add on, like almost like a Lego type of concept.
Sure.
And so it is much more feasible for them to continue to add, even though all the initial foundation work is being done in this upfront phase, so that they can add a little bit more easily in the future. With regard to when we could do it, The goal is actually to do it as soon as possible to add on additional phases. And that's where, folks like Governor Green, Director Jimmy Tokioka, DBED, they've been the most proactive and aggressive champions in talking with high wealth individuals and organizations to see if we can bring in other additional partners to add on to the amount of money that the state is investing into the stadium. So they have been very aggressive. There's a lot of opportunity for additional external sources of revenue or monies coming in to invest directly into building that bigger, better stadium that we want from day one. And so that is in the works. Hopefully it's sooner than later. With regard to schedule,
bombarding me with stuff. And so I guess another concern is the state putting so many of their eggs in one basket in terms of talking to certain individuals. Us in the media know who you're talking about, and we know of the one particular person. But how about thinking outside the box? I know the state has always been against gambling and things like that. How about a state lottery? I mean, let's start. It's 2025, and use some of those funds towards the stadium. It is our gathering spot in the state. It's going to be our largest place in this entire state for all of us people to gather, as you guys know, and you're deeply a part of it.
Yep.
I just think there are other ways that maybe we need to look at other avenues.
Absolutely. And I know there's a lot of rumors about who the state is talking to, but I think people are going to be very surprised. New monies come in, I think people are going to be very surprised as to who these different organizations and individuals are. I know the rumors. I know everyone's been hearing some of the very same names, but it's not limited to those individuals. And in terms of gambling, you know, that's not something under our control. It's something that the legislature and the governor have control over. So those conversations are being had.
And there's the issue too of upfront cost for getting the stadium going, and you've outlined those in detail, Brennan, in terms of the initial $400 million and so forth. But we're also looking at long term maintenance of a stadium, right, mm-hmm. Sanford, and also in the long term, hoping for the development of the whole area beyond the stadium to be able to generate some income for the state. You know, I was talking to this issue with Joe Kent, who's the vice president of Grassroots Hawaii, and he brought up the issue of tax increment financing, which is a nuanced thing that we might want to introduce listeners to. Let's start first, though, with hearing what Joe Kent had to say about that.
The problem is that any income from taxpayers would be put back into the stadium. So, and that's because they're trying to use certain TIFs, which is a tax increment financing, that basically says that taxpayers have to pay all future tax revenues into the stadium. And so it's not like the state would win revenues from this. Those monies are going back into the black hole. Even the state has said that the stadium is not going to really make money, and that they'd have to be bolstered by some kind of other revenues. So it's not like this is going to be a money tree.
So a slightly pessimistic outlook there, Sanford. But talk to us too about the sort of the difference between revenue that might be generated from the stadium itself and the 98 acre development that we're talking about as well. Those are two different sort of buckets, right?
Correct. First, let me clarify about what we're proposing here. And the term is called tax increment financing, but people give misconceptions as to what that means. It's not an additional tax. It's revenue generating. Right now,
it's new taxes.
New taxes.
I mean, it's new tax revenue. It's not a new tax. It's a new tax revenue source. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the misconception that this caller has.
Correct. You know, right now, what is the site generating, the 98-acre site? You have the swap meet there Wednesdays, Saturdays, and Sundays, and they had occasional concerts here and there. This is a long-term urban district, but we want to create attractions here that both visitors and locals will attend. I mean, we've got the Grammys now. Why don't we have a Hawaii Music Hall of Fame? Why don't we have a Hawaii Sports Hall of Fame, which could be housed within the stadium? So the stadium is activated 365 days a year. We've been traveling across the country looking at different venues and what are we missing. When I first moved here from Maui to go to university, I mean, you could start in one end of Waikiki and go all night long and all the way back. I mean, you had, you know, Don Holt, Edward Ka'apana, Society of Seven, Melvin Lee, Jimmy Borges. I mean, we had all of these different venues of different music. Mele is a big part of our culture, our tradition here, but you don't have what we had here 45 years ago. And so to bring that back, and food is another. I mean, the culinary arts and the ethnic diversity and the history of how Hawaii came to be, the social fabric that we have. I mean, Pearl Harbor across the street gets about 1.6 million visitors a year. And we could feed off of that as well. But more importantly, create a community where people live, work, play, thrive, and learn. So we're addressing the entire housing ladder from workforce rentals to low moderate to market. You know, I've been in this business for over 35 years, and we've never kept up with household formation, population growth, which is reflected in our median home prices, both single family and multifamily. And so we need to build more inventory. We're short 60,000 units. So the plans to build between 4,000 and 4,500 residential units in both rentals as well as for sale will put a little bit of the dent. And today, the Halawa site is central to Oahu. It's like it's in the Pico.
Between, it's the Pico, yeah.
Yeah, the Pico from West Oahu to East Honolulu.
Yeah. Well, to stick with the sort of issue of revenue that might be generated in the long run, I just want to give listeners like clarity in terms of what the possibility, because I know the state, Brendan, has talked about $2 billion possibility, right? So how does the state actually see some of those monies, the benefit of some of those monies?
So specific to tax increment financing, I mean, the key word is incremental. And so like Sanford said, you know, right now there is no property tax revenue generated from the 100 acres at the stadium site, right? It's state lands with no private activity. And so the city does not collect any revenue from the stadium property. Once we start developing the area with commercial interests, residential interests, now the city is going to have the ability to apply property taxes to those specific parcels. And so that's a new source of property tax revenue going to the state. And in at full build out, we estimated it at somewhere between $15 to $20 million of new revenues, new additional incremental revenue on this property to the city. And so what tax increment financing would do is it would allow the state or the property, NASED, to share in some of that brand new property tax revenue with the city and utilize that towards investment of either building infrastructure like roads, water, drainage, whatever, or maintaining it. And so that's what tax increment financing would do or allow us to do at the stadium site. But on top of that, and I think it was one of the questions, the stadium contract that we have with Stanford is that they will also maintain and operate the stadium, meaning, you know, everyone knows government is not the very best track record at maintaining infrastructure, whether it's, you know, roads, facilities, whatever it is. And so by placing that burden onto this private operator, that shifts a lot of, number one, the quality of the maintenance that's going to occur, and also the ensuring that we receive a stadium at a certain quality level once it's returned in 30 years. And they got to pay for it. The state is not on the hook for paying for any of the maintenance. And like we said, you know, revenue generated from a stadium, and this holds true for any stadium across the country. They're all loss leaders. They all lose money. Heinz Field in Pittsburgh, they lose $60 million of revenue every year because that's what it costs to run something like that. So we know we can generate enough operational revenue from the stadium to cover regular maintenance, but it's that capital maintenance, the large thing when the chiller breaks or whatever it is, that's the kind of expense that some of these other funds that the developer will have access to for whether it's the swap meet revenues, whether it's some of this other external forms of revenue, they'll use that to pay for some of this capital maintenance.
Yeah, and I do think it is important to keep track of the fact that with the old stadium, there was no such system for paying for maintenance
exactly.
and keeping track of it, right? So that's important
we
for us.
We relied on the legislature to provide that money every year.
Yeah, and I heard Scott chime in with a true there as Brennan enumerated other stadiums that
true.
Are loss leaders. You had a reaction to that?
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree. I mean, I understand. I've been to so many different venues in my life, luckily, just because of my profession all across the country. And so what they're saying is absolutely right. I totally agree with that. But I do have a question of just kind of the kitchen table kind of things, because all these things are important. But I think the average fan, it's minutia to them. They just want to go to a place where they feel comfortable and they get a chance to hopefully watch a good product. And, you know, perceived or real, Aloha Stadium over the last handful of years, people didn't have a good feeling about that place. And they didn't feel like it was inviting. And I never felt like that. I loved Aloha Stadium all until the last day. But I think it became a place where people just didn't want to go. So I think with the new stadium, obviously it's very important to make it feel inviting, but I'm kind of curious about what initially when that first home game in 2029, what are people going to walk into the stadium and have? I mean, we hear bleacher seating, there's not going to be a roof, and eventually I understand that hopefully all those things will be addressed. I get that. But I'm just wondering, when you come to, is there going to be a cup holder at least in front of your seat? I mean, what are we going to have?
We're really dying down on details.
People are asking me those things, you know.
Sure. You're right, Scott. I mean, this is the experience, right? This speaks to the experience that people have when they walk into the space. And so, Sanford, tell us, what level of detail have you gotten down to at this
sure.
point?
So, Scott, first of all, I want to say, we autograph every project we do. And I feel like, you know, like I said, I feel like I got a 10,000-pound gorilla on my back, not a monkey. There's
sure.
a lot of eyes and a lot of people, you know, it's a heavy responsibility, and I'm up for the challenge. And we always take pride in what we do because I want society to be praising us for the next 100 years and not criticizing us. What we're doing here at the Aloha Stadium is not unique. It's a transformation that's going on across our country with sports-based entertainment and mixed-use, transit-oriented, equitable transit-oriented communities. To share with you some of the like-minded projects and where to utilize tax increment financing and community facilities district bond financing. And these types of financing are all tax-exempt bonds. It's 32 years. The bonds are paid off over a 30-year amortization. There's 2 years for construction. So it's a long-term tax-exempt bond finance program, which is at a lower cost of capital that allows you to do more. But if you look at Mission Bay, Mission Rock, Cardinal Nation, Busch Ball Field in St. Louis, Missouri, these are the types of projects that are using these financing tools to revitalize and create economic catalysts within these cities, and it's all working. Treasure Island off of San Francisco, that's being built utilizing these types of financing. So, you know, we're studying all what has worked in other cities and to filter through what we feel will work here. Right now, we're running the financial models as to how much debt can we take on based on our absorption of commercial leases, residential rentals, and future for sale housing in order to anticipate the ability to meet the debt service requirements that will dictate how much we can borrow. So we're trying to identify those gaps right now, and we're running the economic models. But we also plan to go visit multiple cities as to where they're building like-minded projects. But one thing about Hawaii, unlike the mainland, is that we've got an incredible rich history and culture. The Halawa Ahupua is rich with mo'olelos and history that will be weaved into this community. So people, when I say people will learn, they will learn about the history of the Ahupua from the Ko'olau Range down to Pu'uloa, which is Pearl Harbor. And, where else on the mainland can you have something like this, you know, to have...
Stanford.
Yo.
Stanford.
Yo.
People... people want to know if there's going to be cup holders.
Scott, to your point and your specific question, Scott.
No, absolutely, absolutely. These are the considerations.
The experience that they will have at this new stadium is going to be much different and much, much more inviting and warmer than the old Aloha Stadium, and even more so compared to TC Ching. While many people will still probably sit in the bleachers because there's only going to be a limited number of seats, and I know that's a big issue with many people, including my in-laws, who tell me all the time they want their own individual seats. But that's going to change over time. But yes, there it is. Your concession experience, the offerings of food and beverage are going to be far more better than what it used to be. There's going to be far more bathrooms, especially for the women attending. I know that's always one of those big issues that we always get complaints about. And so those are the kinds of things that will be better, at least from the first experience. And then over time, as we are successful in getting additional external monies, you are going to start to see that stadium experience continue to morph over the period of time. And so that I think is what excites us the most. But yes, I'm not sure if the cup holders are going to be there from day one, but they will come.
The west side of the stadium will have seats. And cup holders.
Yeah, it's yeah. Where we have individual seats, you'll have some of those cup holders for you, Scott. But in the rest of them, like many of the other college stadiums across the country, the bulk of the stadium will be bleachers, and then you're going to have maybe some of the more premium alumni locations that can have or accommodate individual seats with the cup holders.
And the reality of college football stadiums, I think, those of us in Hawaii, we're pretty spoiled, I'll be honest with you. And I've worked in college sports on the mainland as well. I can't tell you how many college football stadiums I've been to, and 99% of them are bleacher seats.
Yeah. But to your point, Scott, Hawaii, we've gotten used to a certain level of a different type of stadium. But, and all of us, we grew up in the stadium, right? I grew up right down the road in Aliomanu. And so I used to walk to the games all the time. We attended. My mom used to work for UH, and so we went to every single game. My dad was a high school football coach, so we'd go to all the games. I played, right? Most of us who played high school football in Hawaii played in the Aloha Stadium. And so those are memories that not only do we continue to want to cherish, but also want to impart on some of our younger generation who will continue to play in the new stadium for the University of Hawaii.
All right, listeners.
How can the community help? Is there any way the community could help out in this? I mean,
that's a darn good question. Scott, that's a great question, and we're going to take a break now, and I'm going to put that in our minds for when we return. This is The Conversation. We'll be back in a second.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Furniture Plus Design.
Looking for cool, unique experiences and events happening across our Hawaiian Islands? Let your new HPR besties show you the way. Introducing HPR's Social Club newsletter. Every Wednesday, get the latest happenings straight to your inbox. Sign up at hawaiipublicradio.org/socialclub.
Support for HPR comes from Aloha Air Cargo, connecting Hawaii by providing inter-island shipping with services including Aloha Next Flight Out, Aloha Standard Overnight, and Aloha Economy. AlohaAirCargo.com.
Don Robson.
If you're just tuning in, today's show is a call-in about the Aloha Stadium, memories, plans for redevelopment, and we want to hear from you. Call us at 808-941-3689. Our neighbor island listeners, how does all of this strike you? Do you have memories of coming to Oahu to see concerts, to watch games? Do you have hopes for the new stadium? Let us know, 808-941-3689. Before we broke last time, I think Scott asked a five-star question. How can the community help this effort? How can the community jump into the effort to develop this land and the stadium, Stanford? I throw it to you.
So our plan is to have a grassroots campaign. We engage with the community so the community can be involved. I mean, this is a community asset. It belongs to all of us. And so we are planning a grassroots campaign. It's much like, you know, when UH built the School of Architecture building, we all made contributions and had our name on the seat. When we built the Maui Arts and Cultural Center on Maui, I mean, there was a whole grassroots campaign of residents contributing towards that effort to build, you know, a culture and arts center. So yes, we will be rolling out a grassroots campaign here for the stadium.
And I would just add, you know, as long as the public remains informed, you know, do their homework as well. You know, we have a very good website with a lot of FAQs on there. But also, you know, when we do need to go to the legislature for certain things that are going to pertain to the stadium, you know, those are going to be opportunities for calls to action, you know, to come and help support the stadium, let the legislature and the decision makers know what's important to our community. And I got to think that the stadium is one of those important assets that the community believes we need to have, which is why many of us are putting so much time into this project.
And I know there are so many outstanding questions about what can happen with the entire development, Stanford. But we have a caller who has a question for us, Margaret in Honolulu. You're on the air.
Hi. I just really am thinking that this is just a bureaucrat's wet dream. You know, it's just not fair to the taxpayers when we've got salt, we're being fined for the sewer upgrades. We don't have money for the rail. I mean, we don't need a stadium that big. You know, it's not right that the taxpayers put the bill on this.
Thank you for that,
and
Margaret.
There's no transparency on the cost.
No transparency.
It's all under wraps, you know, and we don't know how much it's going to cost. One sole bidder is ridiculous. I know how, you know, probably we kind of suspicious how it came about. And it's just really disappointing. I'm just not.
All right.
I mean, we don't need a stadium.
Thank you for that, Margaret. So, yeah, I mean, obviously some pushback on the idea of a stadium altogether. Brendan, I know you tried to give some clarity there in terms of what the public is on the hook for financially. I will say that the state has a fantastic frequently asked questions page that is very thorough, 30 pages that dives into some of the funding questions. But Stanford, maybe to talk to Margaret's concerns about sort of the focus on a stadium, let's talk about some of the what are some of the other things that you help this development brings to the community beyond sort of football use for a stadium? What other uses can we see for that facility, and what else can we see happen on this development?
Well, aside from housing, entertainment, the culinary arts, we've been in discussions with Nainoa Thompson about creating the cultural center home for the Polynesian Voyaging Society. To share with the world how the Renaissance came about, starting with the early 70s, with the building of the Hokulea and the journeys that they have embarked on over the years, taking back and cleaning up Kaho'olawe. But that has continued to grow and outreach into many other endeavors here.
We have another caller, Michelle from Kaneohe. Michelle, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Michelle.
Yeah, hi, I'm sorry. I was trying to put you on speaker. I'm a passenger right now. So anyway, what I wanted to ask is, I didn't get to the top of the show, so how many seats are you guys looking at the stadium at this point?
Right. So Stanford gave us a good recap of that. Stanford, for those listeners that didn't hear it, you want to just give us a quick recap on the seat count?
Sure. So the phase one will be 22,500 seats.
Oh, it's 42,000.
No, 22,500 in phase one. And then we'll add in phase two, 7,000 seats in both the north and south end zones, and between 8,000 and 10,000 seats on the second tier East Bowl. So it'll range anywhere from an additional 22,000, which would be 26,500 seats, to
So over 40,000 seats is in phase
okay.
two.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that
part is good. But how, you know, the thing that, okay, we have an aging population on Oahu. And I'll tell you right now, there's a lot of folks who like to go to other venues besides sports.
Yes.
And we don't want to be sitting on bleachers,
right,
in, you know, in a stadium, and it's what, only the people, the high maka kind with all the extra money to spend, you know, yeah, they're going to get to sit in seats with cup holders and seating, and, you know, and if I'm spending $200 for a concert ticket, you know, I don't want to be sitting in bleachers.
So, yeah, thank you for that, Michelle. So we've talked about some of the, Brendan, some of the seating being bleachers, but in terms of concerts and this sort of puzzle pieces, being able to move seats around, talk about that, Brendan, in terms of concerts.
Yeah, so, you know, one of the other activities and events that we wanted to ensure was going to be able to come, not just football, but not just world rugby and international soccer, but concerts as well, and also high school graduations. People seem to forget that the Lowell Stadium would host about 5 to 10 high school graduations every year because the capacities at their own schools couldn't accommodate the amount of attendees. And so, you know, there are going to be opportunities to have all kinds of different kinds of events and activities at this new stadium. And I'm sure, you know, ASM Global is the operator, and they are one of the world's best arena and stadium operators in the world. And so, you know, if there is going to be, you know, a demand or interest in, you know, maybe putting temporary, you know, seat backs or cushions or whatever for specific events like a concert or graduation or whatever, I'm sure that kind of concept will be contemplated by ASM Global, because, you know, for them, it's about ensuring that the experience for all of the attendees are as nice and memorable as possible.
All right. And so we have just about 2 more minutes left with all of our guests. I want to give each of you, we can divide that time up evenly between each of you. Don't get quite a minute, but just final thoughts that you might want to leave listeners with. Scott, I hear you chuckling over there. You know, time management on the radio, it ain't easy. But tell us,
yes,
what are your sort of final questions or thoughts about the stadium? Scott.
Oh, you're talking to me? Okay,
yes.
I'm sorry. I think a lot of times things get lost in translation when you read an article or maybe you just see a little piece on the news. I thought this hour was super informative. I really appreciate both Stanford and Brennan from coming on and I think answering a lot of questions. I know a lot of people were asking me that I needed. And I think the community, for the most part, is behind this project. And we all just want this to be done right. And I get the feeling, and I can tell, that both of you guys also feel that same way. And that gives me encouragement. And if there's anything I can do, whatever I can do to help.
Thank you for that, Scott.
Thank you.
Brennan, about 30 seconds. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, no. We just appreciate all of the support and patience, obviously, because this project has gone ups and downs throughout the time. So, you know, we're all excited because we're as far as we've ever been. Having grown up in the area, I'm super excited about this transformation of the whole community because it just used to be just a stadium and a big parking lot. So I'm very excited to see what Stanford's going to make it be.
And Stanford, final word to you, sir.
I hear everyone's concern. Like I said, I feel very responsible for what we're planning to build and take it to heart. Like I said, we autograph our work. We always do. And, you know, it's easy to criticize, but we want to find solutions. And the only way we can be a part of the solutions is to be a part of it and have a seat at the table, which is why we're here. And we've been pursuing this for 6 years now. So
all
we're
right.
working hard at it.
Well, we are so grateful to all of you for being here. Where did that hour go? It went so quickly. Brennan Morioka, Stanford Carr, Scott Robbs, thank you so much for being here today. Thank you to our listeners who joined us. That wraps it up today. Tomorrow, we're going to be learning about a pilot program to solve bus driver shortages with a carpooling app. Share your comments or questions about what you heard today by calling our talkback line, 808-792-8217, or email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. You can also find the conversation on our website or as a podcast on Spotify and Apple. I'm D.W. Gibson, in for Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.